You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Golden State going for the gold. Steph closing in. Wiggins winning. What will it take for them tomorrow night? And what will it mean for the chef if he cooks up number four? Why this title might well mean more than the other three all put together. And then, how about them Cowboys? We'll tell you why the wheels might just be the final piece of the puzzle for Mr. Prescott. All that and a whole lot more as we get up with you, starting right now. Delighted to be back and better than ever and to have this squad put together. JJ's got a nice haircut.
Thank you.
I like it.
I appreciate
looking
that.
Sharp. Graziano's ready to go. Amari's going to catch some alley-oops this morning, and that's not all. We got a good squad put together for you here, but let's get going. We start with baseball. That's right. What a performance last night from Miles Michaelis, the mustachioed hurler for the Cardinals on the bump against the Pirates. Pick it up in the eighth. Cards up 9-1. Michaelis with a no-hitter. He's at 115 pitches as he strikes out Yu Chang, and we're going to the ninth. No hitter, intact, top of nine, one out. Tuca Pita Marcano is at the plate. There's a little lazy fly ball. A little more of a liner, but it's going to be caught. We're now one out away from the no-hitter. Fans on their feet. They can feel it. They're looking for history. Cal Mitchell getting his first at-bat of the game. Harrison Bader is the center fielder. Harrison Bader is on his horse, and Harrison Bader isn't going to get there. Oh, it's a ground rule double, and the no-hitter goes just like that. Take another look here at the reaction. The dugout can't believe it. Michaelis can't believe it. He'd finish going 8 2/3, six strikeouts, 129 pitches. Cardinals win it by a score of 9-1. I was in the ballpark when that happened one time. Two outs in the ninth and a no-hitter broken up. That was in Chicago. This one was not. Michaelis looking to become the first Cardinal to throw a no-no since Bud Smith did it in 2001. It's the third time a Cardinals pitcher entered the ninth without allowing a hit. Since then, he's the first Cardinal to come within one out of a no-no since Michael Wacha in 2013. So a great night, but not all the way for Michaelis. Meanwhile, the Warriors trying to go all the way tomorrow night. They're one win away from their fourth title in eight seasons, and they're here thanks in large part to Andrew Wiggins. How good was he in Game 5? 26 points, 13 rebounds in a 10-point home win, and that performance was much needed as Steph Curry had a very uncharacteristic tough night, going 0 of 9 from deep, ending his streak of 233 consecutive games with at least one made three-pointer. On the other side, the Celtics not getting what they need from their superstar Jason Tatum, who struggled again in the fourth quarter. He's shooting just 24% in the fourth in this series. So, according to Caesars Sportsbook, the Celtics are a 4-point favorite to win tomorrow night in Boston in Game 6 and force a Game 7. The Warriors still favored to win the series, and Steph Curry is a heavy favorite to win Finals MVP. So let's dive in again with JJ and Amari here. JJ, I'll start with you. Let's get as specific as we can. What is the one thing the Warriors absolutely have to do tomorrow night to win the championship?
It's continue to defend. We've talked a ton about Steph Curry's offense through four games. We talked about Wiggins and his points in the paint in Game 5. It really comes down to their defense. They've done an excellent job of forcing Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown into crowds, and they have not made good decisions. They forced them into tough shots. That's really what this series has been about. It has been about the Golden State Warriors defense. We spent so much time before the series talking about the Celtics defense, but really the Warriors have just outclassed them in that regard.
It's a really good point. We talked about the Celtics defense because they're so good. We talk about the Warriors offense because they have the Splash Brothers and everything else. But Golden State did have the number two defense in the league. What have you seen them do in particular to Tatum in these fourth quarters?
Well, it's Andrew Wiggins. I mean, this guy's a lockdown defender, man. We're seeing how he's playing now. He's coming into his own. Offensively, we know he's a great player, a solid offensive player, right? You know, first pick in the draft, and he's shown to be a good offensive player. But what's surprising me mostly with him is the defensive side. You know, when he's guarding Jason Tatum, you know, out of 55 possessions, Tatum maybe scored 13 out of those possessions. I mean, that's a great stat. And so for him to be a two-way player and to show these things in the finals is great to see.
That defense that you have seen there, it's not just on Tatum, but obviously it has been connected even when they've tried to isolate Steph. And clearly, we've seen the Celtics, their goal has been get Steph one-on-one with somebody, and then that guy will back him down and all the rest of that. But the Warriors have had answers.
Well, they have, and they've tried to target and hunt Steph. And anytime Steph Curry has been switched on to Jason Tatum, if you look at the low man for the Golden State Warriors, it doesn't matter who it is. It could be Gary Payton, could be Draymond Green, could be Klay Thompson. You watch any clip where he's on Steph Curry at the top of the key. They're bringing that secondary help defender over early. The second he gets by him, they're basically trapping him in the paint, and he hasn't made great decisions out of that. In about 20 minutes, we'll get to an adjustment I think he can make that would be better to make better decisions out of that. But that secondary defender has been key for them.
So we'll talk more about Tatum, but I am fascinated by the Wiggins of it all, because on Sunday NBA, or on Countdown leading into the game on Monday night, it was in this case, one of the four of us said that Wiggins was going to be the key to the game. Oh, that's right, it was me. I finally had one right. Wiggins really has it, because they needed someone to do it. And Klay Thompson, after the slow start, he's been much better, and we're going to talk more about him later. But they needed someone else to step up. No one knew that Steph was going to have the offensive night he did, and it really was Wiggins who carried them that night.
Absolutely. And this entire finals, he's been stepping up, you know, on both ends of the court. And the thing I'm impressed about him the most is that he's getting to his spots on the basketball court. He's taking his time. He's elevating over the defender, knocking down the shot. He's focused on personnel defensively. He knows where the guys want to go. So you can tell he studies the game of basketball, and he's taking upon the leadership of Steve Kerr and the coach staff. He's taking that into consideration and using all those tactics that the coach is teaching him and applying it on the basketball court.
What a trade that's going to wind up being. They got him and a first-round pick and a second in that deal. So that's going to wind up having been a really good deal, it would appear, for Golden State. Let's go to the other side. JJ, what is the one thing the Celtics absolutely have to do tomorrow night to stay alive?
It sounds so simple, and we talked about it a bunch yesterday. It comes down to turnovers. They're 1-7 in these playoffs when they have 16 or more turnovers, and they're 13-2 when they have 15 or under. If you woke up Friday morning and looked at a box score without even looking at the final score, the Celtics want to win, they got to have 15 or less turnovers, and they got to have 15 or more threes. It really comes down to that, because they're making threes when they're making good passes and making good decisions and shifting that Warriors defense.
So I agree with you. It sounds simple. How do you do that? I mean, let's teach the fans a little something here. If your objective is to limit turnovers without being unnecessarily, you know, unimaginative or whatever the term is, how do you do it? How do you limit turnovers?
Let's just talk about the two primary playmakers for the Boston Celtics. That's Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. They are getting a lot of times past their primary defender. When that secondary defender comes, they're almost always playing off of one foot. They're getting in the air. They're making poor decisions out of that. They've got to come to 2 feet. And sometimes it's just a simple swing pass. Yep. Shift the defense, let that guy get into a drive and kick game. They did that really well in the fourth quarter of game one. And what was the result? They hit 9 threes.
Right. Yeah. Well, absolutely. How about it? How do they go about making sure they don't let Golden State out on those uncontested fast breaks that turn into threes and all that? How do they limit these turnovers?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult because in the playoffs, the court is shrunk, right? The teams are playing. They know their personnel, so they know where guys want to go. So it's tough to get your shot off. The best thing for those guys to do, speaking of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and like Jay was saying, when they beat their defender, the low defender's on his way. So it's tough to make a decision out of that. So the best thing for them to do is, when they beat their defender, is to get into the guy's body, the defender's body, and create space to get your shot off before that second defender comes. You know, those are things you work on in the offseason or in practice or after practice, where when you beat your man and he's trying to take up space, you get into his body, create more space, and shoot the shot there, opposed to driving all the way to the help. And then now you're in a situation
you're right on that. And again, it goes back to do that. How many feet are you playing off of? You're playing off of 2 feet.
Absolutely.
You're playing off of 2 feet. And they need to do a better job of using their size off of 2 feet to get shots off.
Yep. Well, let me hold it here for the moment. We have plenty of time all morning long to work our way towards game six, and we will. However, huge story in the NFL yesterday. I'm not sure how many folks had a chance to see and hear what Deshaun Watson said as he met with reporters yesterday facing more questions about the 24 civil lawsuits that have been filed against him. He's accused of inappropriate sexual conduct during massage sessions. Yesterday, again, at Browns minicamp, he proclaimed his innocence.
I met with the NFL a couple weeks ago, and I did everything they asked me to do. I answered every question truthfully that the NFL asked me. I spent hours with the people that they brought down. And that's all I can do is just tell them and be honest and tell them exactly what happened. And I know they have a job, so I have to respect that. And that's what we want to do is cooperate. And, you know, they have to make a decision best for the league. You know, I've been honest and I've been truthful about my stance. And that's, you know, I never forced anyone. I never assaulted anyone. So that's what, you know, I've been saying it from the beginning, and I'm going to continue to do that. I just want to clear my name and be able to let the facts and the legal procedures continue to play out.
Again, that was Deshaun Watson yesterday. We have our insiders here, Dan Graziano in studio, and Kimberly Martin is there in Cleveland. And Kmart, you were there not only yesterday, but also for Watson's introductory press conference. What are the most important things the fans should know about what he said yesterday?
Just, Greeny, just how different things feel from a few months ago, where that press conference before was very tense. We're asking Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, why is this guy sitting next to you so important that he should get $230 million with all these lawsuits? Now we have two additional lawsuits, and yesterday, as much as the conversation was about the allegations, Deshaun Watson talked a lot about community and how he's been embraced and how he understands the regret that he has is how it's impacted everyone around him. But inside this building, they are all on board with Deshaun Watson. News that comes out may be new to fans and the public, but the Browns still feel they did their due diligence. They feel at some point everyone will know the truth, and Deshaun Watson and the Browns are just focused on trying to turn the page to football and hopefully get some wins.
Yeah, and there's no real way of getting a sense, is there, Dan, of when to expect some resolution in this, right? There's the timetable, as generally speaking, throughout NFL history has been difficult to predict, and maybe now more than ever before.
You're talking about in terms of what the league will do with regard to personal conduct policy? Yeah, it's difficult because, as Kimberly mentioned, two new lawsuits filed last week, right? So even if the league thought it was through its investigation and ready to make a decision on whether or not to discipline Deshaun Watson under the personal conduct policy, they now have to take that into consideration. And there's no question that part of the league's calculus here is if we make a discipline recommendation and then we find out later down the road, these cases go to trial, we find out information that we didn't have and should have factored into the decision, we don't want to be in a position where it looks like we didn't do enough. So I think it could take a while. They would love to have this resolved by week one, but it's possible it's not. There is a scenario in which he's on the field week one, still awaiting a resolution of it.
Okay, Kmart, how about that part of the story here as far as the Browns' understanding of when there will be some clarity on this and their expectation?
Yeah, Greeny, the Browns are not sure, but they're expecting and hoping that it happens soon before training camp because they want to get this resolved as well. And a lot of fans want to know who's going to be the starting quarterback in week one. There is a lot to unpack, as Dan mentioned here. And if the league makes a decision, they cannot come back and add more games to that suspension. Right. But the Browns do expect him to be suspended. The question is how long and for how long, how much, how many games?
We have seen in the past, though, I think Antonio Brown, when he was suspended a couple of years ago, when the league imposed that suspension, they said if more information comes out, we reserve the right to add to it. So it is possible, but this really is kind of an unprecedented situation for one big reason. The new CBA signed 2 years ago changed the discipline policy. Now, if the league decides on discipline, it has to go to a jointly appointed arbitrator between the league and the NFLPA who will decide on whether that is fair discipline in this case. So this could really take a while for procedural reasons,
yeah,
too. Yeah,
it's not just the league making a decision here. All right, Kimberly, stay close by. We will come back to you as you'll be there all day with coverage as the Browns continue to work through this. There's a lot more to get to, and we will. In the meantime, other sorts of football news to get to. Look who's back on the practice field for the Ravens. Is Lamar Jackson getting set to go, or is he making a huge mistake just being there? Plus, back to Boston, Steph Curry. Is he about to light up the garden again? What would a championship and MVP this week mean for his legacy? We'll answer those questions. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Pass. passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meet nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Back on Get Up, time for our Camp Pass. 15 teams opening up mandatory training camp yesterday. Let's run through some stories. Dan Graziano, what do we have our eyes on in Kansas City?
I want to see if they can get a deal done with their left tackle, Orlando Brown. He's not there. He's a franchise player who hasn't signed the franchise tender, so he doesn't have to be there. But he's a critical player, obviously, to Patrick Mahomes' protection. Remember, they overhauled that offensive line last year after it got them beat in the Super Bowl. Brown has until July 15th to sign a new deal, and I'm curious to see whether they can get that done and get him into camp.
All right, I like it. Ninkovich is with us this morning. Rob Ninko, what do you have your eyes on at the Dallas Cowboys camp?
Well, I want to know what this team's identity is. Are they going to be a team that's going to drop back and pass all? Or are they going to turn into a running team that, where they have to use that running back position where we know Dak and Zeke are going to have a huge year this year? And what is that offensive line going to shape up to be? Last year they weren't good enough. Can that offensive line carry the load?
All right, and Graziano, I'm coming back to you here as we go to Baltimore. What do we have our eyes on with the Ravens?
Can they keep everyone healthy this offseason? Felt like last year, every time the Ravens had an offseason or training camp practice, we were hearing news about another major injury. And they were decimated with injuries last year. It obviously caught up with them later in the season. So what have they done in terms of keeping guys healthy, and can they get everybody who missed last year back and ready to go? They could be very formidable if they do.
Well, that's for sure. One of the players that they lost late in the season was Lamar Jackson, and that was the one they couldn't ultimately overcome. But he is back on the practice field, and Coach John Harbaugh yesterday was impressed with the way he looks in his offseason conditioning. Listen.
He's physically in very good shape. I thought his arm looked really good. You can see he's been throwing a lot, and you can see he's in great condition, physical condition. So it's great to have him out there. He kind of boosted everybody's spirits a little bit too, and it was good to see, and he threw some great balls, so it was fun.
Look, we have spent so much of this offseason talking about Lamar Jackson and his contractual situation. At this point, should we just expect that he is going to play the year without an extension?
I expect that he's going to play, whether he gets an extension or not. In terms of whether he gets one between now and the start of the season, it's really anyone's guess. What we've heard all along is that the Ravens are waiting for him to sort of come to the table and reengage them in talks. They had some talks last offseason. They didn't get to a deal. Both sides are still open to doing it, but there just hasn't been a lot of movement on it. It doesn't feel like it's a huge front burner issue for Lamar. Maybe that changes once they get through minicamp.
And a little behind the scenes here, we're having some technical issues, so we've lost Rob Ninkovich, but we've gained Dan Orlovsky. That's the trade that we've made here, and so let me bring Orlovsky in as we can get to him. Dan, I've heard so many people say, oh, Lamar is crazy. He should never set foot on the field. He should never play without a contract extension. Why don't you see it that way?
Because of Dak Prescott. 2 years ago, Dak Prescott missed basically a whole season with a terrible ankle injury, and then proceeded to become one of the, if not the highest paid quarterbacks in football that offseason. So everyone that's, you know, kind of making the statement, well, he shouldn't step on the field because of the risk of injury, there's very little risk of injury in it really altering how much money the Ravens will or would be willing to pay him. And I think that's the reality for Lamar. Is he can look back from 2 years ago and say, well, Dak missed the whole season, and he was completely fine when it came to getting paid. Greeny, it also makes me think of two other things. And I've made this point 1,000 times. Last year, through 12 weeks of the season, Lamar Jackson was the MVP, and the Ravens were the number one seed in football with historic injury numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think he sits there and thinks, what if? What if they don't get hurt this year, like they did last year? They can go make a legitimate Super Bowl run. And I really believe there's two ways quarterbacks get paid in the league. One, you outplay your contract. Two, you win at an outrageous amount. He's got the chance, if they stay healthy, to do both of those.
I think that's right. And we'll all remember that a quarterback in Baltimore did that. Joe Flacco, yes, bet on himself, won a Super Bowl, and became, in that moment, the highest paid player in the league. And so Ninko is back. Ninko, is he set up for that? Let's put the contract to the side. Is Lamar Jackson set up to have a huge, they've lost Hollywood Brown. I feel like there's some questions there beyond just the injuries. Is he set up to have a huge year in Baltimore?
I think so. I really think that he is. And you look at the offense and the defense, especially the defense last year with the injuries and the cornerback position. You know, they lost a lot of guys, like Dan was talking about. When you lose that many key pieces, it's really, really hard to keep it all together. And I think last year, with all those injuries, they kept it together pretty good. And if Lamar can stay healthy and he can continue to do the things that he does best, moving in the pocket, getting out on the edge, using his legs, looking downfield, and you talk about Hollywood and stretching the field out. They have the tight end position. They brought back the fullback, a key piece. They have a fullback, a great fullback. So I really think that they can do great things this year as long as they stay healthy.
And just put a ribbon on it for me here, Graziano, if you can, as far as the contractual piece of it is concerned, because I think there are probably some who are looking at, what's the holdup? Like, right. why is it that something that seems as obvious as he wants them, they want him, can't get done?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not in Lamar Jackson's head, so I don't know exactly. But there are reasons, right? He's not coming off his best year. You don't want to negotiate a new contract when you're coming off a down year, an injured year. So maybe he thinks he'll be in a better position to do it this time next year. Again, this could pick up in the time between now and training camp, but there hasn't been any real movement on it since last offseason, and the indication that the Ravens have is that Lamar's not in a huge hurry.
That is frequently when these deals get done. All right, and stay with me here. More football as we go, but up next, back to basketball and back to the finals. The Celtics star is struggling. What is wrong with Jason Tatum? What has to change for Boston to save its season tomorrow night? We'll talk about it. Plus, is Steph about to torch the Celtics in Boston? What would a championship and a finals MVP mean for his legacy? That conversation's on the way. Get up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back on Get Up. J.J. Redick, let's play a game of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Going back to Monday night's Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Give me something good.
Andrew Wiggins' individual defense. Obviously, he's been matched up with Tatum a ton. Forced him into 2 air balls in Game 5. And the rebounding. 13 rebounds after a big Game 4 where he had 16 rebounds. He's been awesome on that end of the floor.
Wiggins, spectacular. Give me something bad from Game 5.
Jason Tatum again in the fourth quarter, struggling. He was 1-for-5 in Game 5 in the fourth quarter. He's now 5-for-21 in the series in the fourth quarter.
We've got a couple of Dukies here, and that was Jason Tatum, the Duke star, struggling. And then finally, give me something ugly from Game 5.
Well, Jaylen Brown has had some great moments throughout these playoffs. In this series even, he was really bad in Game 5, and it comes down to a shot profile. 5-for-18, from the floor. 17 of those shots were tough, contested shots. They've got to figure out a way to get him some easy ones.
You brought up earlier today that Golden State's defense has been sensational on the two Boston stars. Brown with the four turnovers in the fourth quarters of games 4 and 5 combined. Jason Tatum has not made a two-point basket in either of those fourth quarters, and I promised that we are overrun with Blue Devils in our studio here as our buddy Jay Will has made his way across the hall. Delighted to have Jay Williams, J.J. Redick, and the big fella Amari Stoudemire. But J.J., I'll come back to you first here to look at Tatum in particular. I know you have some tape put together on why he has been struggling here, particularly with the turnovers.
Yeah, with the turnovers. We talked about him, his ability to get by his primary defender. A lot of times on a switch, that is Steph Curry. And if you look at this, he's almost always picking up his dribble and playing off of one foot. He never comes to a jump stop. That one, he airmails into the fifth row. Watch Wiggins here. Wiggins is in a help position. He tries to play off one foot through Wiggins. All it takes is one dribble, simple pass to Marcus Smart. Now the Golden State Warriors are in rotation. There's not enough of that. Again, getting downhill, playing off of one foot. Kevon Looney with great help defense. And again, throws it an errant pass that leads to a Gary Payton foul.
I hate to say something this simplistic, but Jay Will, as I was watching the game, sitting next to our buddy Jalen Rose, he kept pointing out to me that on those drives, Jason Tatum's head is down. Mm-hmm. Frequently, he's not dribbling and sort of scanning the floor. And as a point guard yourself, Jay Will, and not that Tatum is a point guard, but in that situation, he kind of it. Well, you know what I mean. In that situation, Jay, I didn't mean to limit you, but in that situation, Tatum is sort of acting that way. He's got to be a playmaker. His head sometimes is down, and maybe he's not seeing the things that we're talking about here.
So the first 6.5 minutes of game 5, you know, he didn't take a shot.
Right.
And I'm very curious, you know, when Jaylen Brown gets going a little bit, like they run some pin down, some curl actions, like they get the defense rotating side to side. If you're looking at a lot of these plays from Jason Tatum, it's an ISO scenario, so pick and roll. Like the defense knows what is going to come. I would love to see Ime Udoka get him going early by running some action for him, getting the defense to rotate a little bit, keep them guessing, because when everybody sees it coming, it makes it challenging.
How about it, Amari?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think you hit it spot on. With dribbling with your head down, you don't see where the defense is coming from. And make the simplicity play. As you penetrate to the basket and you send the help guy there, just make the simple pass and the guy that catches the ball be ready to shoot. I mean, it's a simple game if you break it down in that sense.
In some cases, it seems to me, the Celtics, who do not have your classic point guard, right? I mean, Marcus Smart's terrific, but he's spotting up. Marcus Smart is out there looking, and he's been knocking down three, so give him his credit. But it is on Tatum and Brown generally to initiate that offense, and right now in the fourth quarters, they're really struggling to do it. It's as simple as that.
They stagnate, and I think Jay Will makes a great point there, and I broke down this for detail. It'll be out later today. On Jason Tatum's game 5, they need to get him in more action. They run a play, a lot of teams run it. Spurs used to run it for Manu Ginobili. It's called backside. It's a simple pin down for Tatum, and then he gets a dribble handoff from the 5. He was able to knock down a 3 on that play. They need more of that action. They need less ISOs. Golden State's loaded up, boxes and elbows. As I said, when he is in that slot against Curry, they're bringing that second help defender over early, and he's just not making the right reads.
And Greeny, I just want to add one point to JJ, because I think that's correct, and I'm not making any excuses. Look, this is the NBA Finals. We're going into game 6. But when you look at the minutes log for Jason Tatum at 24 years old, 945. Do you know the most minutes logged in the playoffs for Golden State? Klay Thompson, 200 minutes less.
Wow.
So think about that usage rate, and think about ISO and what we're talking about here. Late in fourth quarter, heavy legs, man, to make those kind of shots at a young age.
The Warriors have gotten more off their bench in this series, generally speaking. They've gotten more from other places. And there's a look. At the end of the day, you want to be first team All-NBA. You want to, you know, you want all the things that come with it. I mean, that's kind of what comes with it, right, Amari?
This is what
comes with it.
You still
got to find a way to do it.
You got to find a way. I mean, right now, you can't, like Jay saying, you can't make an excuse about it, right? Obviously, you're logging a lot of minutes, but you have to find a way to win down the stretch.
Yeah, my neck hurts a little just looking up at you.
Welcome to our lives daily.
One way or another. Okay, I mean, Jay Will, let's do factor.
My life daily.
We're going to set this thing up here. Factor fiction. Jay Will, Andrew Wiggins is the Warriors' second most important player. Factor fiction.
I would probably say that's a fact. He's their second most because of his role on the defensive end. Even this possession, everybody talks talk about Jordan Poole, but look how he fights over the top of the screen. Look how they blitz the screen again. And then here's the best part. Gary Payton gets a great contest on Jaylen Brown, but who comes up with the defensive rebound? Who gives the kick pass to Jordan Poole? So, yes, most important player second, but I still can say the second most impactful player who can make runs is Klay Thompson.
Fair enough. Well, then let's get to him. If I were to say Game 6 Klay is going to show up tomorrow night, is that fact or fiction?
I don't think I need Klay to be prolific. It's not about the point totals to me, more so about the momentum he creates and when he gets going offensively. I think that's the more important detail related to Klay than everybody getting lost in Game 6, Klay.
And then finally, let's go to Steph. If I were to say he is going to be named the MVP of these finals, is that fact or fiction?
I mean, that's fact for me. I do say it does make it interesting if this comes down to a Game 7 moment, how a lot of people will say that game, like, where will Steph come to the party in a Game 7 at home? Well, that creates an interesting scenario.
You know, he comes off the game where he doesn't make a three the other night, JJ. I saw you turn and look at Jay Will as he was answering that question as though
that's our relationship.
A mystery. We had a bit of a debate in the pregame on Monday night over whether he would be in position to be the MVP even if they lose, which has only happened once before, and that's Jerry West, and that got everybody yelling because they like to yell on that show with me. But generally speaking, I mean, if not Steph, who else would even be in line for that? He's been overwhelmingly, it feels to me, the most valuable player in this series, no?
Well, here's my thoughts on a player from a losing team getting MVP. Mm-hmm. To win a championship, you're ultimately going to need someone to step up big time. Someone will be worthy for the Celtics if they were to come back and win this series, even if Steph goes ballistic for the next two games.
Well, let's start with the question that's actually on the screen then. Maybe I skipped ahead to the what I think. Is he going to do that?
Yes. He's
angry.
Step to step. It's been 3 years since he had an offer, right? It's his first time in the playoffs. Like, it's an anomaly what happened in Game 5. He's been so good throughout this playoffs and in these finals. He absolutely will. Steph will be Steph.
Let me ask Jay. Ask him a question, because you're as close to knowing the answer to this as almost any human being can be. I mean, Steph Curry's the greatest shooter ever, so no one knows what it's like to be him. But you know what it's like to be a great shooter. When you have a night where just nothing goes in, how does it feel the next game? Does it rattle you in any way? Like, what is your mindset going into the next game when you've had a night like that?
Eight for 12. It's always been my mindset. It's always a regression to the mean. When I have an 0-for or a 1-for-10, it's always 8-for-12. If I get 12 good looks, I'm making 8.
You act like this guy has a conscience. Like the greatest shooter.
Steph doesn't have a conscience.
Zero conscience. It doesn't matter what I did yesterday. Today's a new day. I know who I am. And by the way, I love the way they played the action differently. Al Horford up on a lot of those screens. But let's be honest about it. Like, later in the game, a lot of Steph's shots were short. It wasn't because he was getting contested. They were open shots. They were just short. He'll be fine.
And so we should take from that what? Maybe just tired? He carried such a huge part of the load in Boston in Game 4. Why are shots short?
Well, I mean, shots short due to your legs. But, I mean, also, it's just sometimes you have those shooting games. I mean, sometimes you just... It's not there.
It's just not, we just don't ever see it from him, right?
Well, we've seen it.
But not like that. He hadn't had a game where he didn't make a three in 3 years, including the regular season. Amari, for him coming off a game like that, what do you expect from him tomorrow night?
He's going to show up and show out, man. I think, after having a game like that, you know why you didn't score the ball or make a three in Game 5, right? So you know what you have to do to get prepared. And like Jay was saying, his legs could have been tired because he's carrying a load for this team. And so now going into Game 6, he's going to be fresh and ready to go.
And so how about it? What do you expect from him specifically? 8 for 12? If he gets 12 looks?
I wouldn't be shocked if he goes 8 for 12. And as Jay said, they have made a little adjustment to that drop coverage. He absolutely eviscerated them through three games. That drop coverage has been much better in Game 4 and Game 5. He's going to figure out a way to get 10 to 15 threes off.
By the way, Greeny, if they lose, like if I'm Stephen Curry, I don't want that damn MVP. You can keep it. I don't want to be reminded of me losing in NBA Finals. And by the way, if Boston is able to win Game 6 and Game 7, do not sleep on Jaylen Brown being the MVP.
Yeah.
Do not sleep on that.
Yeah, if they wind up winning, someone will be the reason why, and then we can have that conversation then. Mm-hmm. But let's say he does play big. Let's say he wins it tomorrow night. And Steph now finally he gets the fourth championship. After Kevin Durant, he wins one, and he gets the Finals MVP. I would argue that would be the most meaningful of his career from a legacy standpoint. It's our job to sort of define legacy. I don't know what would mean the most to him. That's his business. But as far as what it would mean for his legacy, I would argue to do it after Durant leaves, to finally get the MVP trophy, that this would be the most significant championship for his legacy?
1,000%. I think so, too. I think two things happened. I think you now talk about Steph in that top 10 greatest of all time. And also, I'll tell you this. If you think about the tier of coaching, where does that put Steve Kerr?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think about the greatest coaches in the game, Phil Jackson, Red Auerbach, Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, is Steve Kerr at number five? 4 championships, 6 NBA finals in 8 years. It starts that conversation.
In terms of the MVP and the significance of that, I think more about this championship and the significance of that for Steph Curry and the Warriors. From being away from the spotlight, being away from the stage for 2 years, Steph has that wrist injury in 2020, Klay misses 2 years. The journey back to this moment, yes, I think that's more meaningful even than the first one.
I think so. And then the two in the middle are always going to remember because they was just unfairly good. They added Kevin Durant to a team that had 73 wins. How about it? Would this be the most meaningful championship for Steph?
I think so. I just think the battle of coming back to this moment, playing without Kevin Durant, kind of somewhat rebuilding, restructuring your team, bringing in Andrew Wiggins, guys being injured, having a frustrated situation with Klay being injured, that was tough to deal with. And now to see those guys back into the NBA Finals and Steph Curry playing at a high level, like you say, he's in his prime and he looks like he is. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely think this is a big moment for Steph
Greeny,
Curry.
I've never seen you on a shot on TV where it's just your shoulder.
I'm distracted.
Above.
I have to admit.
It doesn't even show your body. It's
out of
shoulders
the corner of my eye, I could see that monitor over there. And I look, can we get me a box to stand up? Bring a box out here. Hembo, come on. Just walk out here with a box. You can walk out here with a box. Someone, very quickly, because we're taking unnecessary. See, I just think for future reference, this will look a lot better.
There it is.
You know, Amari Stoudemire and I often see eye to eye on issues. We can do it for real. All right. Game 6 of the finals is tomorrow night, 9 Eastern, on ABC and ESPN Radio and ESPN Deportes as well. Warriors trying to lock up their 4th title. We'll be in Boston with you. The NBA Countdown crew will start your night 8:30 Eastern on ABC Game 6 with the trophy in the house. Meanwhile, as we continue here, how about them Cowboys? We'll tell you why the wheels might be the final piece to the puzzle for Mr. Prescott. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN. And I'm staying on this box. I don't care what anybody says.
Look at that. And you're still shorter.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back on Get Up, where the Dallas Cowboys are among the teams that opened mandatory minicamp yesterday. A year ago, of course, Dak Prescott was not fully clear to take part as he worked his way back from that injury. This year, Dak says he's much further along and his confidence is through the roof. And one addition to the offense, according to his coach, is the plan to add more quarterback run. Listen.
I think like anything, it's just, you know, this is year 3 in the offense. The opportunity to move more, you know, potentially than he did in the past. The thing that jumps out to me is his movement ability in the scramble drills and scramble situations. You know, the way he activates the scramble drills. So just, you know, it's just he's got more reps at it. It's more natural to him. So it looks really good.
You know, it is an interesting. Uh-oh. Ninko, why are you shaking your head like that? What's the problem?
What are we talking? We do not want Dak scrambling. Like, that is not what I want my franchise quarterback to be focusing on, scrambling around and running. No. He is – how much money did they give him? A lot of money. How did he injure himself? Was he in the pocket or was he scrambling for a first down? I really want my quarterback to stay – number one, stay healthy. Number two, stand in the quarterback and make all the throws. I don't want a scrambling quarterback. Unless you're Lamar, I don't want a scrambling quarterback. No.
Well, that's
interesting. I don't like it.
That's interesting to me because, look, the quarterback run, forget the scrambling for a minute. No one ever gets into a huddle and says, okay, a broken play on 2, let's go. But the idea of adding more designed use of his legs, which is a big part of his talent, but his skill set. He's a good runner with the football, and they don't do a lot of it. Is that, Nico, do you not like that idea for their offense?
You're one hit away from, like, smashing your index finger and not being able to throw the football. You can get another running back to go in there and run a design run. You can make a lot of different plays up to design a run play. You can't design a new quarterback to come in and lead your team. Like, you can't do it. So for me, you have to be smart in how you go about using the quarterback position to design run. Okay, quarterback sneak, low red, 1 yard line, goal line's right there. You're 1 yard away. You've seen Tom Brady do it a million times. You see all these other quarterbacks do it. You get under, quick count, boom, touchdown, run. Okay, yeah, that's smart. But quarterback power, lead power with the quarterback, it only takes one play. And nowadays, especially, these linebackers, they're not looking to hit you up top. They're looking to take your knees out. So I really think it's more risk than the reward you're going to get out of it for a 10-yard run.
It's an interesting question. Graz, what do you think?
I think they ran him less last year because he was coming off the injury. But, you know, in his first 3 years in the league, he had 6 rushing touchdowns in each of those 3 years, one last year. So it's probably a good idea to work him back in at the goal line where he has been a weapon for them in the past. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that. Ninko seems like he's getting a little fearful in his old age. Maybe he wouldn't have been so careful with Tom Brady when he was playing and Brady was sneaking at the goal line. But I think they can incorporate. What worries me about the Cowboys is the health of the offensive line. Yeah. That's been an issue in recent years. And if they need Dak to be able to scramble more to help his own protection, then that speaks to a bigger issue, I think, with the Cowboys' offense.
Yeah, I think they have a variety of questions. I think the quarterback is not among them. I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. If you start making a list of all the things you're worried about in Dallas right now, I think Dak Prescott's name does not show up until you were well down on that list. Okay, we will have much more of this as we go, but there are quite a few other things I want to make sure you're aware of on this morning. So let's get up and go, and let's begin in St. Louis. We opened the show with Cardinals pitcher Miles Michaelis, who was one strike away from a no-hitter against the Pirates, and then that happened. Cal Mitchell hitting a ground rule double just over the head of Harrison Bader broke up the no-no. Again, 2 outs in the 9th. Cardinals would win the game by a score of 9-1. Big news from tennis. Serena Williams says she'll be making her comeback at Wimbledon later this month. The 40-year-old has been awarded a wild card entry for the singles. She hasn't played since getting hurt last summer during Wimbledon. So obviously great for tennis to get her back. And then in golf, the U.S. Open gets underway tomorrow in Brookline, Massachusetts. Yesterday, 4-time major champion Brooks Koepka had a lot of criticism of all of the questions he was receiving about the rival LIV Golf Series. Listen.
I don't understand. I'm trying to focus on the U.S. Open, man. Like, I legitimately don't get it. I'm tired of the conversations. I'm tired of all this stuff. Y'all, like I said, y'all are throwing a black cloud on the U.S. Open. I think that sucks.
I get his frustration as we bring Michael Collins in live at the Country Club. I understand him being frustrated about that, but there is no room for criticism of the questions. That is overwhelmingly the most important thing that is happening as we speak, is there is basically a split in one of our major sports in this country, and I don't know how closely people are following it. So, Michael, he said there's a dark cloud hanging over this U.S. Open. You're there. Is that the right way to put this?
Yeah, very much so, because of the outside stuff that's here. This is a USGA U.S. Open. It's the 122nd playing. We're at a historic place, basically across the street from Francis We Met, who had one of the greatest upsets in golf history 100 years ago with a little caddy named Eddie Lowry. And no one's talking about that because this has become the LIV Golf against the PGA Tour, who has nothing to do with the USGA. But of course, last week was the LIV Golf event. They're all over here playing this. Not all of them, but there's a lot of them over here playing this week. And everyone's, you know, wanting to talk about the guys that haven't committed to go over there, like Brooks Koepka. His brother Chase is over there. So there's a lot of questions to him about where his commitment lies, and he's trying to focus on just this event. So yeah, in a sense, there's a dark cloud hanging over this event because the nightmare scenario, which Greeny, me and you will love, imagine on Saturday or Sunday, Brooks Koepka, or let's say Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau in the final group, LIV guys, Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas in the second to last group, or mix those two up. then it's not even about the U.S. Open. Then it becomes the PGA Tour versus the LIV Tour. I mean, there's going to be crazy eyeballs because it would be awesome for us, but for the USGA, they're going to be sitting there just like.
Well, okay. Is this a rift between the players? We're seeing some guys, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, and a few others have spoken. Again, you saw Koepka there. He was just kind of tired of the questions. Would you describe this right now as a genuine rift between these players, many of whom have known each other, been friends, been Ryder Cup teammates for a very long time? Is there a real rift out there?
Rift is a good word to use because there isn't drama between these guys. There isn't animosity between these guys. I mean, it's on the outside of the ropes where you're hearing people talk about a lot of stuff. But inside the ropes and in the locker room, these guys are still friends. They might not agree with the decisions that one another are making, but when you see these guys out on the putting green or on the driving range, and I'm sitting real close to the driving range now, there is no tension really between these guys that you might expect from what you're hearing. And that tension just isn't there right now because a lot of these guys are looking going, how much did they get? Whew. Whew.
Yeah, Phil Mickelson is a year removed from winning a major. This is the only one he's never won before, and that isn't the story with him leading into this weekend, which is remarkable. Michael, we'll look forward to your coverage all weekend long. Should be amazing theater at the Country Club there outside of Boston. Meanwhile, as we continue here, will it be closing time for Steph Curry and the Warriors tomorrow night? What has to happen for the Celtics to save their season? Those are the questions. We have all the answers. Get up on ESPN.